Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 23, Text 41. Pariputta imam gatam agayata naradam hai patayabhi svadhamasto dhritim ascha satvikim. Pariputta, insulted. Imam, this. Gatam, song. Agayata, he sang. Nara Adamai, by the low class men. Patayad bi, who were trying to make him fall down. Svadharma, in his own duty. Star, remaining firm. Dhritim, his resolution. Ashaya, fixing. Satvikim, in the mode of goodness. Translation. Even while being insulted by these low-class men who were trying to effect his downfall, he remained steady in his spiritual duties. Fixing his resolution in the mode of goodness, he began to chant the following song. Translation responsibly. Even while being insulted by these low-class men who were trying to effect his downfall, he remained steady in his spiritual duties, fixing his resolution in the mode of goodness. He began to chant the following song, purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Resolution in the mode of goodness is described in the Bhagavad Gita 18:33. Dritya yayaya dara yet mana pranadira kriyaya yogena vabarichena dhritrasa partasatviki. O son of Pritha, that determination which is unbreakable, which is sustained with steadiness by yoga practice, and thus controlled the mind, life, and the acts of the senses, is in the mode of goodness. Atheists who are envious of the devotees of the Supreme Lord are called Naradhamas, or the lowest of men, and undoubtedly are en route to hell. By all means at their disposal, they disturb the devotional service of the Lord, sometimes by direct attack and sometimes by mockery. The devotees, however, remain tolerant, fixing their determination in the mode of goodness, as described by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Sri Upadeshamrita. Vachavegam, manaso krodavegam, jiva vegam, udapasta vegam, etan vegan yo vishtadrita, sarva apinam pravivim sa vishate. A sober person who can tolerate the urges to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. Om Agyana Timiranda Shyaganjana Shalakya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Shrimati Hridayananda Goswami Niti Namine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharine Nevisesha Shunyavadi Pashyachade Shatarine Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanevya Vaishnavevya Namo Namaha. So this song of the Avanti Brahmana, this whole situation where he's being harassed and victimized because he is trying to make spiritual advancement. He just understood the external situation that he was in, and he adjusted his Krishna consciousness accordingly. Just put it into top gear, just being fixed. Sometimes we find actually that a little bit of persecution is a good thing. It actually keeps us on the ball. When things are running very, very smoothly and very calmly, we sometimes tend to become a little lax in our devotional service. So thereby, the devotees are always looking for ways in which they can agitate the demons just that little bit more. And that's the fun of devotional service. We actually like to agitate. We actually like to agitate a little bit the demoniac nature in mankind. So thereby we go out and deliberately chant in the streets. I mean, this was unheard of in previous ages, previous decades, that people would actually go out and glorify God. The Salvation Army did it to a certain extent, but the devotees took it to another level. And so, you know, this is also our juice. The preaching is our juice to actually agitate, in one sense agitate, but in another sense to just glorify the Lord. And consequently what happens sometimes is that the demons get agitated, and how we deal with that sharpens our Krishna consciousness, sharpens our conviction to be more resolute in our devotional service. So the Avanti Brahmana just was fixed in the mode of goodness, and he started singing his song to God, the Bhikshu Gita. And he was steady in the mode of goodness. He actually realized his real identity. And with that steadiness, once you realize that you're not this material body and that you're a spirit soul, with that steadiness, just understanding that all we need to do is just this one lifetime, Prabhupada has guaranteed us, just to remain resolute and steady, just this one lifetime. And if we manage to do it in this lifetime, not to just slip away, oh, it's too hard, Prabhu. If we just stay with it and we just resolutely follow the instructions of Guru, be very, very diligent and steady, this one lifetime, Prabhupada has guaranteed us, we'll go back home, back to Godhead. So sometimes we see derelict people, especially if you're working in the city, you see derelict old hobos in the park and so on and so forth, and they get ridiculed by hoodlums and hoons. You know, they like to stir the old guys in the park. But this is a little different. When it's actually a spiritual person, there's an added point of envy. It's not just harassing, but as it's mentioned here in the purport, these Naradhamas, the lowest of men, have an envious streak towards people that are seeking spiritual enlightenment. They are actually totally envious of a spiritual personality, because a spiritual personality has something that they haven't got. They haven't got happiness, inner happiness. They're in a turmoil all their life. You know, like even if you have this whole thing that at the present stage through the school, you have this bullying. Bullying is a big thing at the moment, and it's basically envy. It's basically a bully sees somebody else that's got something that they want, and that they can lord it over or punish them or push them around, and that somehow or other makes them feel better. So it is with a spiritual person. A spiritual person holds a great treasure within. They're not enamored by material things, just as the Avanti Brahmana here. He wasn't enamored. And so he was being picked on. But in the same token, the Brahmana understood that the law of karma was in action here, that it's not that every spiritual person is harassed. You know, it was also, he understood that from his past, from his previous existence, he was now being somehow or other punished for the activities. So he never ever felt that this is unjustly coming to me. He was quite resolute in actually understanding, well, you know, okay, I'm having to cop this at this stage. And he did, with resolution and determination. He didn't cop out. So we can see also that as devotees, we sometimes are afflicted or attacked, but not necessarily by hoodlums or gangsters or Naradhamas, the lowest of mankind. That can happen, as I was explaining in the last class. In the early days on Harinam, we used to get harassed quite a lot. But we can also get harassed by just material situation. You know, the desire to again engage in material life can be a real push, and that can be a real attack. So we have to be mindful of that. The interesting thing that was pointed out here, the Naradhamas, the lowest of men, are undoubtedly en route to hell. This whole point of heading to hell, their hellish situation is that they in the future will have to incur karma for what they've done. So the devotee is always careful in their dealings with other people, because eventually there's going to be repercussions, there's going to be some reaction coming back. if we're negative to other living entities. So we can tolerate so many things, and we can tolerate ridicule, it's not a big deal really, and we can tolerate violence even. There's some really interesting stories that we used to hear when the devotees were being harassed in Europe. In particular, in Europe, in London, at one stage, a devotee told me that at one stage they were being harassed by a group of hoodlums, and they were on a Harinam party, and they were backed up into an alleyway, and these thugs were going to come and really do them harm. And so whoever was leading the kirtan just started chanting the Nisringadev prayers, and just with resolute faith, understanding that the Lord will protect, started chanting the Nisringadev prayers. And they were, all the men and the ladies were chanting very resolutely, and these thugs, all of a sudden, they just stopped and they ran away. And it was really interesting, you know. The devotees thought, wow, what happened there, you know? And so they went back to the temple. And later, one of these hoodlums was picked up by the police for some other thing, and he related to the police and later got back to the devotees that they saw this image of a lion behind the devotees, and they were frightened, or they saw a lion of some description. Yeah, this was ages ago. And they were so frightened that they ran away. So the Lord is there to protect us, not necessarily all the time, but we can call on the Lord. That's why when we do Harinam, and there's ever a time when there's some negative energy that's coming, the first thing you do is you chant Lord Nisringadev's prayers. And just have faith that the Lord will protect you. So ridicule is not a major thing. Ridicule we have to tolerate. Just like as the Avanti Brahmana, he tolerated it. He was steady, resolute. It was interesting, and he didn't fall away from the path. Unlike what happened to me when I was a very young child, I think I've mentioned it once before, I was really determined to somehow or other live a saintly life. I really felt that deep within me. And I was a Christian, and I was reading about the lives of saints, and I thought, yeah, this is what I want to do. This is really appealing to me. And so I set up a little altar in my bedroom, and I had pictures of all the different saints, and Saint Anthony and Our Lady, and all the, you know, and I was sort of offering flowers, something from the past, somewhere there. And my brothers and sisters would come in, and they'd say, what are you, some religious freak or something, or what? You know, and they would ridicule me. And I could tolerate it from my brothers and sisters, but when my parents said, haven't you got something else to do? I mean, wouldn't you like to go out and play sports or something like that? This is a bit strange, Bertie, you know. So that ridicule was upsetting, and I thought, no, this is really, I'll pack it up, I can't handle that. And it was only later, when I started doing worship of Radha and Krishna, that I thought, this is where I belong. Now I feel comfortable. But just a little bit of ridicule can actually take you away from your devotional service. So we have to remain very resolute, very determined. We have to understand that the laws of karma are happening, just as the Avanti Brahmana understood the law of karma. We're not this body, as is pointed out in the Bhagavad Gita, especially in the first two chapters. As we put on new garments, in verse 22 of the second chapter, as you put on new garments replacing the old ones, similarly this body is changed to a new body. So we're not these material bodies. And with knowledge, we can tolerate suffering with resolution in the mode of goodness. We need knowledge. People are perplexed why so many people, innocent people, sometimes suffer. And it's very disturbing, you know, and they can't understand what is the mercy of God here. You know, if God is an all-merciful being, how come so many people are suffering? Nothing is more relevant than in this particular time. Some of you may be aware and some of you may not be aware that there's a huge catastrophe happening in the world at the moment, where millions, not just thousands, but millions of people are being affected in Pakistan. Pakistan is experiencing the worst flood ever experienced for decades. It's actually classified now as the worst human disaster in the last 60 years. It is absolutely catastrophic. 20 million people, that's like the whole population of Australia, is being affected by these floods. Millions of people are suffering and dying because of this flood. So some people may say, well, where's God's mercy? You know, why is this all happening? You know, if you switch on the news, you see young little babies, you know, who are malnourished and now suffering from disease. And it's not letting up. It's not like a tsunami or an earthquake where it happens and then that's it. The rainy season is not over yet, and there's more and more flooding happening over and over again. Villages have been washed away. Houses, two-story houses, are just gone. There's just nothing left. They gave the example that it's similar to, if you can imagine this, there's a 200 kilometre wall of water or a river of water extending from Brisbane to Melbourne. So it's 200 miles wide or 200 kilometres wide flood from Brisbane to Melbourne. That's the measure of the proportion. Can you imagine that? This is all flooded, all the houses. Now, these people were already pretty very basic sort of people, simple village folk. And so, you know, they have no understanding of what the hell's going on. And they have some idea. I mean, you hear some of the mullahs talking about, well, you know, this may be punishment for us from God is punishing us for things that we've done. Or it's a test from God how to be more strong. So we understand, because we're so fortunate that we have this understanding. The Southeastern Asian countries, they have the Vedic understanding of karma. Even the Buddhists understand that. So even though the Avanti Brahmana was being harassed, he never said, oh, why should this be happening to me? And this is the thing that we have to keep reminding ourselves of when we're afflicted by different torments, and either from our mind or from other living entities or whatever, we have to keep thinking, you know, this is happening to me because of a reason. You know, why, people often say, why am I getting ill? Why did I get cancer? Why did I have that car accident? You know, or getting more to a basic sort of thing, why am I not married? You know, why hasn't there been arrangements made that I'm not married? So many things. Why am I poor? Why am I in this natural disaster? So many things. You have to understand there's a reason behind everything. A simple example is this point of knowledge. Is that, say for example, you woke up in the morning one morning and all of a sudden your legs are incredibly stiff. You can hardly move them. Your arms are really sore and really feel, muscles are really tight and everything. And there's like a weight on top of you. You could wake up and you'd be really in a point of confusion. You'd be really worried. What the hell is going on in this? You'd be confused. You're disturbed. You're in a panic. Why is this happening to my body? Now imagine the same scenario if you went to a gym. And you went to the gym and you got your personal trainer and he's putting you through the rigors. You haven't been to the gym for a while. And he's training you, you know. You have to do so many push-ups and so many running on the spot and so on and so forth. And then you go to sleep. And you wake up in the morning and you've got the sore arms and you've got the sore legs and you feel really heavy. We've all had that experience. But what the feeling then is one of elation, that I'm making progress in my physical fitness. You know why you've got that pain in the arms and legs, because you've done this practice, this austerity. So this is the difference. It's the same thing, but you had knowledge, and firstly, you didn't know why you had this pain in the arms and legs, but the second incident, when you've had that gym training, you know why you've got this. So it's actually the whole point of knowing why we suffer is a very important thing. We may not know specifically why this is in relation to a thing that I've performed in my past life or 10 lifetimes ago. That doesn't matter. Just understanding that everything comes to you because of a reason, because of something that you've done, either positive or negative. So the Lord creates this world by the process of what the Vedas call Satkaryavada. Satkaryavada. The notion that a cause is present in its effect. That purpose for existence, there is a purpose for existence, and the purpose for existence is that we are to be enlightened. We have to become enlightened. That's the only reason we're in this material world, to get the heck out of here, that we want to become enlightened. So, as such, anything that happens to us is for our best interest. If we look back at the gym analogy, If we have a good trainer, he knows what the best exercises are for us to perform. He knows that we want to achieve our goal. And if we want to achieve our goal, we have to persevere. We have to tolerate. And so we should think of Krishna, in a sense, God, as the supreme personality of training, or the supreme personal trainer. He's training us. He's guiding us. He's directing us. And the world, this material world that we're in, is a big workout. It's a big gym. And everything happens to us ultimately to get us into shape so we can exit this material world. So the whole process is that if we have this resolute determination of getting out of here, that we have just this one lifetime to complete the goal. The goal is, as Prabhupada said, just dedicate this one lifetime. Just be resolute with the simple process that I've given you. It's not a big austerity. We don't have to go to the Himalayas. We don't have to sit in Copans in the big icy fields or anything like that. We just have to be resolute in our sadhana. Simple sadhana. Chanting, hearing about the Lord, offering worship to the Lord, associating with really nice devotees, following the principles. Not such a big deal. Taking prasadam, singing and dancing. Wow, big austerity. Just this one lifetime. Just to be determined. Just to be determined and follow through. This is the training that Krishna is putting us through. Now, if we've made that resolute determination that this is it, then many, many lifetimes we've performed negative activities. We know that. We know we've done a lot of wrong. We've probably harassed saintly persons in our past. I know I did. I harassed a lot of nuns and priests when I was a young boy. But even in past lives, but if we've made our determination that in this lifetime this is going to be the last one, you can imagine that there's going to be a bit of stuff being thrown at you karmically, all of us, and we have to be ready for it. But as like in a bit good train out, we know, okay, this is the effects, we've got to keep on going. So with resolution. And the question asked is, how much suffering can a person endure? Well, Krishna is really, really an amazing personality. Through the material energy, he only gives you enough that you can tolerate. He's a very good personal trainer. He never gives you more than you can handle. You may think, oh God, I'm never going to get over this, but you can. You wouldn't have got it if you couldn't take on this affliction or whatever is tormenting you. Just as the Brahmana, he could have given up. He said, oh, this is too much. Now they're urinating on my food. This is too much. That's it. Forget it. I'll take leave. He kept on going. I mean, you read those passages before, where it was describing what they did to him, It was pretty horrific. Anybody else would have said, that's it, end of the party, I'm going back home, that's it. So sometimes we may be harassed here, we may have different things happening to us. In our lovely Krishna consciousness, we're not even on the stage of the Avanti Brahmana who's just walking around destitute like a hobo. No, we've got this really nice temple, we've got nice Brahmacharini ashram, nice Brahmachari ashram, fresh cloth, we go to India, we have beautiful prasadam. This is the prasadam capital of the world. We've got really nice devotees. I mean, you hear at the Sunday feast and there's just so many nice devotees, there's so many nice programs. We've got good guardians, a good temple president, good temple president's wife who are guiding us and directing us, doing anything for us. Have you ever seen how much these people do for you? Behind the scenes, how much work they go through, how much anxiety they take on themselves to actually make sure you're all comfortable. Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? I mean, we've just got two kids, and it's enough that, wow, are you okay? They've got a whole temple of people that they have to look after. And constantly asking, hey, is everything all right with you? Can I get this for you? So you've got these wonderful people that are looking out for you, and you've got this wonderful environment. We just have to tolerate the onslaughts of the mind every now and again and different things that are coming to us. And if we persevere, just keep going and treating every day as, okay, we'll get through this day. What can we do? Is my sadhana okay? Have I chanted my 16 rounds? Have I been nice to the devotees? Have I done my preaching? Okay, we've made it another day. Next day. And as Prabhupada said, if you just keep on going in this fashion, then eventually you'll go back home, back to Godhead. Guaranteed this lifetime. So we have to persevere. We have to really, really lock in. Now, Krishna is not a hard taskmaster. He's not a hard personality. He's not someone that just likes inflicting, oh, here we go, we'll give this guy all the karma that he can handle here, you know, really put on it. No, no. We understand from activities that we've done in our past, there has to be some reaction. And so Krishna is like the most gentle, compassionate personality. He's the most. And then a good analogy that can be given is like, who likes to go to the dentist? Anybody really look forward to going to the dentist? You do? You like going to the dentist? Okay, Aditi. Generally speaking, people don't like to go to the dentist. Because what does the dentist do? He causes pain, suffering. Or we have the, you know, the big needle and the drilling and the whole thing. It's not very pleasant. It's not very pleasant. So we don't go out and seek out the worst dentist that we can find. When we were young, my mum and dad came to Australia, and I think I've told you this once before, and my mum used to send us to this dentist, and his name was Dr. Jekyll. And I said to her, hey, listen, I don't want to go to Dr. Jekyll. You can't send us to Dr. Jekyll. Why not? What is wrong with Dr. Jekyll? She didn't know about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know, so... So when we go to the dentist, we seek out somebody that's really gentle, compassionate, and will minimize our pain. Do the minimal amount of pain. There has to be some pain. Like I go to Hiti, Bhakti and Hiti. You know Hiti? Hiti and Nick. And she is the most gentle dentist I've ever been to. It was actually a pleasure going to her, you know, because I put off going to the dentist for so long because I'm such a scaredy cat. I really don't like pain. You can ask my wife, it's just like, Anyway, and she went out of her way. She said, there has to be a little bit of pain, but we'll minimize it. And I hate needles, you know, so she would get a cotton swab of clove oil first and rub the skin where the needle was going to go in, so you didn't even feel the needle going in. And it was just, you know, so she made the whole affair quite comfortable. There had to be a little bit of pressure and a little bit of uncomfortableness, but generally speaking, so Krishna is like that. Krishna is like this really gentle personality, you know, who allows through the material nature the minimal amount of suffering to bring about the essential good. And the essential good is the purification that we have to go through. We performed these activities, we're responsible, we have to now cop it. But Krishna makes it so he'll do the least amount, cause the least amount of pain. So if you stub your toe, or you may break an arm or whatever, consider that it could have been a lot worse if Krishna wasn't in control. That karmic reaction could have been a lot worse. You could have had an arm amputated instead of, or your toe amputated instead of just stubbing your toe. Because Krishna mitigates it. Krishna is known as the triple O God. He's the triple O God. He's omnipotent, omniscient, and omnibenevolent. The triple O God. So we just dial triple O for mercy. There was an interesting thing, and Krishna is the loving father and mother, as he says in Bhagavad Gita. He's a loving mother and father, and he doesn't want to see a child suffer. He doesn't. If we have children, if you have children of your own, you don't want to see your children suffer at all in any way. But there has to be some suffering, you know, because we are in this material world. My father related to me when I was very young, I had to have a major operation, and it was a life or death situation. And, you know, they put me through the hospital and stuff. Now, this little boy didn't understand why I was being hurt in such a way. And he said, you had tubes coming out of you everywhere. There was a big gash on your body. And, you know, you went through a lot of pain through the operation. And he said, I would come into the hospital ward and your eyes would be looking at me just saying, why, Daddy? Why are you inflicting this pain on me? And he couldn't tolerate the look in my eyes. Because I was wondering, why is that happening? A little child has no knowledge why this is happening. The father knew, I have to do this because I love you and I want you to grow up and live. So anyway, we similarly have to be aware that this karma acts. And so no one likes to see children suffering. No one likes to see suffering. And even though we have this knowledge of karma, we simultaneously can't be callous in our understanding of suffering. You know, some people actually have this understanding, and I've heard it on the radio and I heard people talking about it. Oh, you know, it's a good thing that this is happening to these Pakistanis, these Muslims. You know, they're causing so much terrorism in the world. This is not the case. This is not the case. You know, it's a small fragment of the population that has this radical, fanatic sort of... It's only a small, very irrational group that are following this revolutionary and a destructive sort of path. And the general people that are now being afflicted with this suffering in Pakistan, although it is their karma and there's something coming back to them, in the same token, a devotee always sees the innocentness of people, understands that Krishna is residing within each and every one of us. And so the devotee is always compassionate. How can you not feel the empathy towards the suffering of another living entity? You know, we automatically feel that. We feel that even towards our brothers and sisters who are in the animal form of life. You know, we feel compassion to them. The devotee is always compassionate. So when you hear this, it's like a horrible thing to say. So the devotees have to be very, very mindful of that. And a true devotee is always serious about justice and protecting the innocent. Always. That was the whole reason behind the fratricidal war of Bhagavad Gita. You know, there was a war, there was an injustice being done. And Krishna supported that and said, yes, this should be stopped. So this is a really important thing. So when the devotees actually see a calamity like this happening, what's the first thing that the devotees do? They become compassionate. How can we help these people? Like when the disaster struck Haiti, the devotees were over there, bang, straight away, doing food relief. The greatest thing that the devotees can do is prasadam distribution, food relief. Even in Pakistan now, they're saying, you know, the best thing, the most important thing that people need is food. So, you know, I mean, I was just searching through the ISKCON different websites, and sure enough, there's Priyavrata, head of Food for Life. He's already organising how we can help. He's asking for volunteers from all over the world, come and help in Pakistan. This is the next mission. It's amazing, absolutely amazing. The work we did in Haiti has been recognised by Red Cross, has been recognised by the Haitian army who protected us from dacoits and that sort of thing while they were distributing food, and the same thing will happen here. Similarly, we're working through the Hindu Community Council, which I'm the secretary. We're working out ways in which the Hindu community can now help the Muslim community in Pakistan. You know, we're trying different things. We were wanting to form, we wanted to have dialogue with different multi-faiths, and we had funding from the government to actually do these interfaith sort of functions. And now we're actually reviewing, should we use this money instead to have a fundraising effort to raise funds to help the people in Pakistan. So thereby the Hindu community, who really have quite tender relationships with our friends in Pakistan, are actually going out of their way to help these poor people that are now suffering. So a devotee always sees the innocentness. It's our duty also to bring Krishna to as many people as possible. And this is also the point of giving people this knowledge about Krishna consciousness. Not everybody may be ready for this knowledge of Krishna consciousness, but at least if we try, because by gaining this knowledge of Krishna consciousness, just a little bit of knowledge in Krishna consciousness, will reduce your karma. It's an amazing thing. Nothing else will reduce your karma. But devotional service and knowledge in Krishna consciousness will reduce that. A lot of people say, is that really true? Well, in Prabhupada says, in the very first part, in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, which I'd like to read to you, the distinction between the Jiva and Ishvara will be explained in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord is Chetragyan, conscious, as is the living being, but the living being is conscious of a particular body, whereas the Lord is conscious of all bodies. Because he lives in the heart of every living being, he is conscious of the psychic movements of the particular jivas. We should not forget this. It is also explained that Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is living in everyone's heart as Ishvara, as the controller, and that he is giving directions for the living entity to act as he desires. So Krishna gives us the liberty to act as we desire. The living entity forgets what to do. First of all, he makes a determination to act in a certain way, and then he is entangled in the acts and the reactions of his own karma. After giving up one type of body, he enters another type of body, as we put on and take off our old clothes. As the soul thus migrates, he suffers the actions and reactions of his past activities. These activities can be changed when the living being, in the mode of goodness, as was mentioned in this purport, in the mode of goodness, in sanity, and understands what sort of activities he should adopt. So when we come to the realization of what should I do with this human form of life, when we understand that the real purpose of human life is nothing more than to get out of this, to have self-realization, if he does so, then all the actions and reactions of his past activities can be changed. Consequently, karma is not eternal. Therefore, we stated that for the five items, Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, and time, and karma, four are eternal, whereas karma is not eternal. So we can actually change it. So we have the opportunity to change people's karma. We have the opportunity to actually change people's karma. So it is imperative for us to understand and to make a conscientious effort to change people's way of thinking. Now, they may not necessarily take to Krishna consciousness or the philosophy of karma even. Just like we were preaching the other day, we had an opportunity to just be part of an interfaith program where we were singing and chanting. And there were Christians there, and there were Buddhists there, and there were Muslim people there, and all our brothers from all different other faiths were there. And the devotees got up on stage. Number one, we're all radiating. We're all really ecstatic to be there. We're happy to be friends with everyone. And we started chanting, and in the first couple of chants, you know, people were sort of, wasn't it? And then as we went on and they became a little bit more excited and a bit more fun, you know, the people started to put their hands up and they started to clap. And they had an appreciation of us. It's just by being an example that actually to live a spiritual life is a blissful existence, then people will feel a want. Oh, I want what that person's got. I want that friendliness that that person's got. I want what keeps them happy. So by being an example, by being enlivened, that will help others in their evolution. Even our Buddhist brothers, who were sitting there very, very introspectively, they didn't move. they were in constant meditation. They just wasn't it, huh, Mara? When they were the Buddhists, they were just sort of throughout the whole kirtan. You know, it was so nice. I mean, that's their practice. You know. Everybody else is hurry, but even then, later on, they came up and the head monk came up and said, "Very nice." That's good. So we achieved our mission. So in every way, a devotee should see, how can I mitigate people's karma? You can mitigate that karma. Oh, thanks for that. We can mitigate that karma by being very, very resolute and determined to also present it to everybody else. I'm going to stop here, Prabhu. Is there any comments or questions at all? Yes, Prabhu. Sorry. Always wanted to do that. Go on. Yes, Prabhu, sorry. I'm tormenting you. You're a saintly person. I'm tormenting you.
I just wanted to ask,
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. That will save you also. It's just that we reflect back on the torment and suffering that Prahlad Maharaj had when he was being harassed by Hiranyakashipu, and he called on Lord Nrisimhadev, you know. So Lord Nrisimha, Prabhupada also gives direction like that. When a devotee is sick, we again pray to Lord Nrisimhadev. So Lord Nrisimhadev is our protector, and he's, you know, ferocious in his protection of the devotees. So Krishna, in that mood of Lord Nrisimhadev, gives that protection. Krishna has many moods, but you know, when it comes to the point of being harassed, you know, we like to take shelter at the lotus claws of Lord Nrisimhadev, you know. So yeah, it's just like that. It's under the instruction of our spiritual master. Prabhupada has said that you act like that. You call on God like that. Tarika? No, really? Gee, I've never heard that one before. Sorry. Yeah.
That seems to be more painful.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can affect our faith.
Yes, it can.
So maybe you can comment on that for me.
Yeah. That's probably one of the hardest torments. We can sort of accept it when it's coming from other people, you know, when it's coming from people outside our movement. But when we're tormented or harassed by our brothers and sisters, spiritual brothers and sisters, it can be a real trial, a real difficulty. But in every case, even though that is the worst affliction that we could possibly have, in every case we have to understand, why is that coming to me? Nothing comes untoward. Nothing comes for no reason whatsoever. Everything comes about by your desire. Either a desire that you've had in the past, or a desire to work something out right here and now. So if we're being harassed by another devotee, rightly or wrongly, our perception may be that this is a wrong affliction to me, but another person may say, well, actually, what's being done to you is the right thing. When that is happening to you, it is a time that you've chosen it, not somebody else, a time that you've chosen to actually learn from that situation. What can I learn from this situation? What can I gain from this situation? And you have to be really introspective, and you have to really analyze, why am I being afflicted in this way? And what can I do to remedy it, if anything at all? But the main thing is, it's like the Avanti Brahmana, to stay fixed, to call on Krishna. This is what it's meant. The song of the Brahmana, you know, the song of the Avanti Brahmana, is this calling on Krishna. Is this that there is nothing else but Krishna. You know, so this calling on God, please, and praying, not for yourself, but praying for the person that's afflicting you. You know, trying to understand why this is happening. And generally speaking, you'll find why it's happening to you. If you just bottle up in yourself and you just go, oh, I don't know why she's picking on me. I just, you know, why is the temple authority doing this to me? And if you close off like that, then you don't have a chance to grow. If you open up to it and say, okay, what's wrong with me? Why is this happening to me? Sometimes people say, you know, well, the authorities pick on me. You know, the authorities, the temple authorities, they're picking on me. And it's just unjust. That's the wrong attitude. That's not the attitude of the Avanti Brahmana. The Avanti Brahmana prayed to Krishna. And again, by praying to Krishna, trying to understand why that person is doing that, and learning from that experience. This is the point. We are here to learn. Learning gives us knowledge, which alleviates the torment. So we just have to be really mindful that everything that's coming to us is an opportunity for us to learn more about ourselves, to make advancement. And not just shut it off, oh, they're just picking on me unnecessarily, or they're harassing me, you know. And Krishna will give you the direction. Krishna is real. He's within your heart. And if you pray to Krishna, if you talk to Krishna, and you ask him to resolve a different thing, to make it clear to me, my Lord, please tell me why this is happening to me. He'll tell you. It'll come from within, Chetaguru within, intuition. You'll know. And somehow, either through another devotee or a friend, and they'll say, well, they're doing that because, Prabhu, you've been really neglectful in this and this and this and this. Oh, really? And you haven't seen it yourself. Oh, is that what it is? I better make amends on that. And if it's provoked envious attack on you, which also happens within devotional service, then we have to see, okay, then you pray for the person that's afflicting you. You pray for them. You pray to Krishna. Please help them. You know? Please help them. Why is that happening? Please help them. And you understand that what's happening to you is that some time in the past I've done something similar to somebody else. Does that make sense?
Unfortunately.
I know, it's not a pleasant old thing, but we have to always boil it back to ourselves. Yes, Prabhu. Actually, sorry, Mahatmaji. Michael, you had a question first.
Well, there's a comment. Well, I just wanted to say, I wish you hadn't mentioned too, because I have to have a major job done. I'm very sure that I hate dancing. But also, another point to that is how I lost those people. I rolled like a steep roller down a steep incline and smashed the teeth out in half his face. But people saw it, oh, that was terrible. I said, it would have been a lot worse.
Absolutely.
Because I broke motors and things and lost teeth and that, but I was still.
Look at you, you're still here.
Yeah, so I was saying,
you don't look that bad.
I was very happy it wasn't worse, because that was sort of the day when you hear that they got squashed or killed or whatever.
Yeah.
It was on fun. Yeah. So that's the other thing.
Thanks, Michael. Yes, Mahatmaji.
What you're saying, you have to see Krishna's name in everything.
Mm-hmm.
In every activity, you have to see Krishna's name. And strong faith in Krishna, then it protects you completely.
Yeah.
Like Yogi. She has
absolutely.
Both hands.
Yeah.
Did she was thinking I can protect myself? Krishna didn't.
Yep. We can't have this understanding that Krishna is inflicting things on us. Is he all merciful? You know, he's the triple O God. You know? It's not him that is doing this to us. As a lot of Christians and other different younger religious institutions, and I put it as that, they're direction towards spiritual life is bona fide, but they're just younger in their understanding of their relationship with God. God doesn't inflict the punishment on us. We inflict it on ourselves from our past activities. We have to understand that. Have to understand that. And when you understand that and you know that with knowledge, you can carry on. We have to stop here, Michael. If you've got a question, Prabhu, I have to finish. I've been told I have to finish at 8:30 on the dot.
Prabhupada said that our education is not complete because unless we are Krishna conscious, our education is not complete.
That's right. Yep. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.